You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Strider, or is it Sauron, seems to have taken a leaf from the Flamer APT playbook. Quadrooter sounds bad, but there are still no reports of exploitation in the wild. Carbonac Group may have hit Oracle point-of-sale systems. Rio Olympic seeing rogue Wi-Fi hotspots. Acts of war in cyberspace are just cyber espionage and cybercrime. U.S. Marshals to auction Bitcoin seized from Silk Road. And more Pokemon malware is found in the Google Play Store. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, August 9th, 2016. It's evidently Lord of the Rings week in the APT world, or at least was when the coders were writing back in 2011 or thereabouts. Symantec and Kaspersky independently warn of a new threat group they're calling either Strider, that's Symantec, or Project Sauron, as Kaspersky calls them. It appears to be engaged in a highly targeted campaign against organizations in Europe, Asia, and Africa, with Belgium, China, Iran, Russia, Rwanda, and Sweden particularly mentioned as geographical areas of interest. The Strider-Sauron project group is thought to be state-sponsored, but so far there's no attribution to any specific government. Kaspersky says the APT has operated against government agencies, telecommunications firms, financial organizations, military and research centers since 2011. The group seems particularly interested in encryption software. Symantec reports that Strider uses RemSec malware to establish backdoors. They also say that features of its approach are reminiscent of that taken by the Flamer group, discovered and disclosed in 2012. Flamer was itself linked to Stuxnet, at least insofar as they shared some of the same source code. Kaspersky agrees that there are some similarities between Project Sauron and Flamer, but isn't entirely convinced they're the work of the same group, whoever that group might be. This week's other risk with a fancy name is Quadrooter, a firmware vulnerability checkpoint discovered in the Qualcomm chipsets powering Android devices. Quadrooter is worrisome since, in principle, it exposes Android devices to privilege escalation exploits that could give an attacker root access to the device. But matters may not be as bad as initially reported. There are, so far, no clear signs that Quadrooter is being exploited in the wild. And the widely quoted figure of 900 million vulnerable devices is almost certainly greatly overstated. Qualcomm has been pushing updates to manufacturers since April that in all likelihood have fixed the problem in many devices. A general patch is expected next month. In the meantime, if you're curious about your own device, Checkpoint has an online test you can run to determine whether it's vulnerable. As we consider the mobile world, it's worth reflecting on where, considering risk and security, 5G cellular service will take us. We spoke with Dr. Charles Clancy from our partners at Virginia Tech's Hume Center, and we'll hear from them after the break. The Olympics so far seem to have been affected by crime, notably the rogue Wi-Fi hotspots SkyCure and others have been warning about, and a bit of hacktivism directed mostly at Brazilian government websites. If you're in Rio, you should take the sorts of precautions you would have taken last week at Black Hat or DEF CON. Both The Guardian and eWeek look back at last week's conferences in Las Vegas and conclude that things aren't as one might wish in security. While The Guardian's indelicate characterization of the situation is no doubt overstated for effect, still a lot of enterprises seem not to be learning what eWeek calls Security 101 lessons. That well-known commodity attacks continue to succeed is, of course, as familiar as it is lamentable. There are a lot of reasons for that. Enterprises have a lot to do, their resources aren't unlimited, and for small and medium-sized businesses, as well as for private individuals, it's easy to fall into a kind of learned helplessness in which whistling past the graveyard and hoping nothing happens becomes a default security posture. It might be worth quoting some perspective we received from Entrepid's chief scientist Lance Cottrell last week. He notes that many of the things people worry about are Hollywood hacks. Reflecting on his participation in panels on Internet of Things security, he said, quote, "We tend to look for the extreme movie plot threat scenarios. What if they hacked your car and drove you off a cliff? And how likely is it that someone would go after you in such a Rube Goldberg fashion? If they were rationally evil and not in it for the Baroque Blofeldian lulls, wouldn't they just hire a hitman?" Cottrell suggests that it's useful to think about what he called the attacker's mind space. Quote, what are their goals? They want to generate money. Why is ransomware suddenly a thing? Because it's hugely lucrative. Why DDoS? Because it works and can be easily monetized. End quote. And he noted some once common attacks are fading because of black market forces. There are fewer attempts to steal credit cards in part because stolen pay card numbers have now become so commoditized that it's hard to make money from them. So develop a realistic understanding of what you have that might be of value to an attacker and then manage your risk accordingly. Not every attack is out of skyfall. Whenever an enterprise is breached, Cottrell noted, the first press release talks about how extremely sophisticated the attackers were. Of course it would. Quote, you don't want to say some script kiddie used a well-known exploit against our unpatched browser from 2 years ago to own us, but that's actually what happened most of the time. End quote. As the U.S. considers enhancing the status of U.S. Cyber Command, observers suggest that the world collectively, and its security and defense sectors especially, need to devote some thought to reaching clarity about conflict in cyberspace and how it relates to actual lethal kinetic warfare. ThreatPost is running a long, thoughtful op-ed on the topic in which important distinctions are drawn. In particular, it's worth remembering that espionage and propaganda aren't, generally speaking, acts of war, and that it's a stretch to call the tools used to accomplish them in cyberspace weapons. Nor is crime, or even organized crime, generally warfare. We'll add two more metaphors to the discussion, both of which derive from American history but have broader applicability. For all the talk about a cyber Pearl Harbor, we would also do well to recall the difficulty of attribution and worry also about a cyber Tonkin Gulf incident, lest nations perceive acts of war where none exist. A Russian organized crime mob, thought to be the same outfit behind the Carbonek APT, has compromised Oracle's Micros point-of-sale system. Oracle has advised affected customers to reset passwords. Other remediation is underway. Brian Krebs reports that security researchers told him, on background, that they observed a Micros customer support portal communicating with a Carbonek server. How the gang got access to the system is for now unknown, at least publicly. In law enforcement news, Ireland's Garda upgrades its defenses after the cyber attack it recently sustained, Australia sets up a cyber unit to track terrorist funding, and the U.S. prepares to auction off Bitcoin seized from Silk Road. That's some 2,719 Bitcoin, and you don't have to be Satoshi Nakamoto to know that's worth a bit of change, around $1.6 million, just to ballpark it for you. The auction will be held August 22nd. If you're interested, you'll have to register by August 18th. Finally, there are still more Pokemon Go issues. More malicious Pokemon apps have been found in the Google Play Store. A number of them are serving up the Droid Jack rat. And trust us, that's no Blastoise. Be careful out there.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Dr. Charles Clancy. He's the director of the Hume Center for National Security and Technology at Virginia Tech. Dr. Clancy, we all use our mobile devices and we're dependent on the data that those devices use. The next thing coming down the pike is 5G cellular technology. What are we talking about when we're talking about 5G?
So 5G is a number of different technologies that are being aggregated together that are building on top of the current 4G LTE standards that we all use currently in our smartphones. Some of the key features of 5G are new spectrum. So there's a lot of spectrum that is available. It's currently in use typically by the U.S. military, but not widely used here in the United States. And the White House has asked the U.S. military to look at how it might share those bands with commercial cellular service. And then we also have the millimeter wave spectrum up at much higher frequencies that has some also has some interesting properties but could enable extremely high data rate communications. So new spectrum is one key part of 5G. In addition to this notion of cognitive management and software-defined networking and the ability to almost treat your cellular network as an elastic resource for communication from a wireless device into the cloud.
And so what are some of the specific security challenges with 5G?
Well, there's a number that we're looking at right now in the area of new spectrum bands. So the first band really that's being looked at is the 3.5 gigahertz band, which here in the United States is used by the U.S. Navy. And in that band is a Navy radar that's used for air traffic control purposes. So for the last year, I've been chairing a standards committee within the Wireless Innovation Forum that's been looking at how we can share that band between the U.S. Navy and the cellular commercial ecosystem. In such a way that the privacy of the Navy operations are not inadvertently revealed to the public as a part of that interaction. So there's some new standards that are have actually just been published by the Wireless Innovation Forum that define the operational security and privacy protections that this ecosystem will have. So that's one particular aspect that I think is really interesting. The second is in the area of millimeter wave, where you have very high data rate and very high frequency signals. And the technology that's being employed there, I think, provides a unique opportunity from a security perspective. Much of this, these signals are such high frequency that they generally don't penetrate walls. So unless you're in the same room as the access point, you may not be able to receive a signal from it, which is obviously good from a security perspective in terms of limiting potential exposure. Also, technology being used, massive MIMO, where you've got many antennas, and these antennas are all transmitting signals that cohere at your specific physical location, also prevents someone that's in a different physical location from being able to intercept or receive your signal. So I think that's a unique opportunity that will help improve security with 5G cellular.
Is there any sense for what kind of timeline we're on when we may be seeing 5G in our personal devices?
Well, as with all of the different cellular standards, it's a kind of an incremental process. So I think that we're going to see some of the frequency bands becoming incrementally available over the next 2 to 3 years. Technologies like millimeter wave are still in the R&D stages. There have been demonstrations that they will work and will work at scale, but so far they're nowhere near ready for commercial product development.
All right, Dr. Charles Clancy, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.